Starting Overdrive. Real stories of starting over with Red Seaton.
Hey everyone, welcome to Starting Overdrive, where you'll hear real stories of starting over from real people of all walks of life. I'm your host, Reg Seaton. Life can often be a series of unexpected, transformative events that test us to the very core of our being. For many people, expecting the unexpected has become a way of life, especially after dealing with so many unexpected events. Unexpected events can bring us closer together as people or tear us apart. They put us to the test physically and mentally in ways that help us grow, learn, move forward, and, when necessary, help us to start over. There's so much in life that we can't control. Change is often forced upon us. One moment, we can be on top of the world, and everything is fine. The next moment, in the blink of an eye, our world can be disrupted and devastated in ways we could never have expected. This episode's guest is Stephen J. Edelman, digital marketing specialist and host of the Deep Ripping Reality podcast, who was unexpectedly forced to start over when a Category 3 tornado ripped through his neighborhood in Iowa and passed directly over his family's house. After surviving and rebuilding from the tornado, Stephen and his family were forced to start over again when, in 2020 during the pandemic, sudden hurricane-force winds ripped through his neighborhood, forcing him into another state of rebuilding. No stranger to starting over, Stephen shares his life journey of dealing with natural disasters, change, risk, chaos, and many things beyond his control. As you'll discover in this episode, Stephen also overcame the challenge of having ADD, turned his life around after being diagnosed, and transformed both his personal and professional career to live life from his true potential and passion. Find out how Stephen J. Edelman started over from it all on the latest episode of Starting Overdrive. Stephen J. Edelman, welcome to Starting Overdrive.
Thank you.
I think a lot of people are going to relate and draw inspiration from various aspects of your story. You really changed your life around in ways that I think a lot of people are trying to do today. And you're currently working toward a master's degree, but you've also had to start over from and work through a diagnosis of ADD, which can be a huge challenge when trying to achieve your goals. But before we get into that, you've had to start over from what you said yourself on one of your videos was arguably the worst 4 years of your life. You survived a tornado destroying your house. Can you talk about what happened?
Yeah, so at the time I was working on my undergrad degree, I was working on my bachelor's degree. And so that in and of itself was a heck of a process because I went from being a full-time employee and the breadwinner to a full-time student who my wife is working full-time. And so I'm driving 120 miles a day to get to school, between dropping my son off at daycare and going to school. And we finished classes that day and I went to go pick my son up and the daycare provider was like, "Do you want to head into the basement?" And I went, "What?" And I said, "No, we're good." And they said, "No, look, the weather's getting really bad." And my daycare provider is about 20 miles away from where I live. We live in Marshalltown, middle of nowhere, Iowa. There hasn't been a tornado. And we were always told that because there's a little river that goes by here that we would never get one. But it just wasn't going to happen. And we never had to worry about that. And so whenever the tornado warnings and sirens went off, we just kind of was like, okay, you know, we'd go down to the basement, but it wasn't anything we took seriously. So I hopped into the car and I took my son. And I think he was 4 or 5 at the time. I strapped him in and we headed back home. And when we got home, my wife had my daughter downstairs and the cat and my 70-year-old mother-in-law in the basement. And they're listening to the radio and they're talking about it. And what happened that day was an EF3 tornado came through our town. And not just our town, it went through our historic main street and then took a beeline and turned and went directly down my street. The eye of the storm literally went over our house, so much so that it was hectic 1 second and then everything got quiet and we thought it was over and my ears popped. I looked out the window and I saw that it shifted direction. The wind kind of shifted direction. And then I said, "It's not over yet." And it hit again. So it was chaotic. And the weird part about it, even though we were kind of prepping for it for about 40 minutes before it happened, nobody expected it to hit Marshalltown. There's other huge towns that have big factories. I think it's the Vermeer factory was the other one that was hit. I think we had 3 tornadoes that day across Iowa, and they all had pretty severe damage. I mean, you can go on YouTube and just search Marshalltown, Iowa tornado, and it was devastating. My neighborhood doesn't look the same. No, I'm fortunate enough. I mean, it didn't completely demolish my house, but I had to have 8 trees removed. I had a privacy fence that had been installed, and that became shrapnel. And we had to have, I think, 9 windows replaced, and my roof had to be rebuilt. And I live in a 2-story house that was built in 1920, and all of the walls and ceilings had to have an extra layer basically be redone with drywall. So our entire house had to be, we had to move out all the contents of our house and put it in storage essentially for like 2.5 months while they worked on our house and literally move all of our stuff back in. So in the meantime, I was still going to school and working on my bachelor's degree. So we're in the hotel lobby and I'm studying for finals and midterms at like 2 a.m. on a crappy internet connection and then having to wake up super early and get my kids off to school, you know, like it's any normal day, but we're living out of a hotel. I was blessed enough to have really good insurance that paid for that. But meanwhile, I'm seeing neighbors who their insurance is saying they're not going to cover them anymore. And they don't know if they're going to have to demolish their house. And a lot of them have had to. My neighborhood looks completely different because huge apartments and houses that have been there my entire life. We moved in 2015, so they've always been here as long as we've lived here. No, I'm sorry. We moved in 2005, not 2015, but they're gone. So it was chaotic and it was crazy. And I felt so badly. I mean, we celebrated both of our kids' birthdays in hotels that year. And there's nothing normal about celebrating kids' birthdays in hotels and just wanting to go home and knowing that there's nothing in your house. You can't go home.
I've only ever seen footage on the news of that happening. How do you start over when you see your house in pieces on the ground? Where do you start?
One day at a time. Actually, I should have shared this before our conversation, but I documented it. I did a video and it was called What We Saw. And I don't even know if it's still public, but I videoed it from the minute that the tornado had ended. We started walking out of the back of our house. It wasn't because I wanted to show the world. It was because I wanted to show my insurance guy the damage, because I didn't want to get screwed, because I'd heard horror stories about insurance guys really screwing people over. My aunt and uncle live in Parkersburg, Iowa, and a few years prior to this tornado, there was an EF5 that destroyed their stuff, and so I was very leery about it. And the first thing I thought was, okay, I got to document the damage. I got to call the insurance company and figure out if we're covered. I got to figure out if we have loss of use coverage. And the primary concern in that moment was we need to get our kids to safety. We don't know if our roof is going to collapse. We don't know anything. And so as we were walking through our backyard, there was a huge electrical line that was down across the backyard. And we didn't know if it was live. Turns out it was. So we were careful in stepping over that. And so minute by minute, figuring out where do we go? What do we do? And everything that you think you know about how to get places. I mean, it takes 15 minutes to drive across Marshalltown, Iowa on a busy day. And it took 2.5 hours, 3 hours because they were blocking roads off, because the trees down and the onlookers that would drive by your house and people trying to clean stuff up right away. And you can smell gas in the air. So you know that there's natural gas leak somewhere. And so starting over at that point takes one day at a time, staying on top of stuff. What helped us was we grabbed a notebook and we started organizing everything, made sure that we had everything documented, and then figuring out what the critical needs were. And we talked for a split second about whether or not I should drop out of school because we didn't know what was going to happen. And I said, I'm not going to look at this as a sunk cost. I have to keep going. And my wife, she didn't bring it up as an option. I think she wanted to get my feelings on it. But yeah, it was cleaning glass of the car so that my kids could sit in the car without having to worry about getting cut because the windows were shattered, figuring out if the car was drivable. It was insane.
I did want to ask you, as a husband and father, you were also dealing with your family starting over. How were you able to create a sense of normalcy in such a beyond normal situation?
That's a great question. I'm fortunate enough that I have the ability to see things both big picture and small picture at the exact same time and figure out the steps to get to where I need to go. And then I'm very good at delegating. It's what makes me a really good leader, in my opinion, and what I've been told. So with my wife and I, we were very, very, I would say, addicted to the idea of how are we going to keep things normal for our kids. And so we talked about things and we tried very hard not to talk about it around the kids, but you can't not, you know. When we knew we were going to have to stay in a hotel, not only did we grab clothes, but any toys that they had, things that we knew would keep it normal. So we grabbed like the PlayStation and we grabbed the Nintendo Switch, things that they enjoyed doing that would keep it normal, books that they liked, And we made sure that they had, because there are certain times of the day that we would plan on playing. So we tried to keep as normal of a schedule as possible. And that really helped us kind of start over with this new survival lifestyle. And then during the day, my wife and I would come to the house and one, check on it because there was no electricity and we were worried that somebody would loot it before they could clear everything out of it. And number two, we had to go clean all the crap out of the fridge. All the things that you don't think about that you're going to have to replace, all the food, all the perishables that need to stay cold. We'd wake up and we'd make a list. What are we going to do today? How are we going to make it normal for the kids? Because the part of the story that I don't think we talked about on either my podcast or really publicly was that there's a big event in Iowa called Ragbri where they ride bikes across the state. And when that happens, it's great for tourism, for the community as they go through. The problem is it takes up all the hotels. So normally you would have, even in a normal situation, and I use that word loosely for a tornado, you would have people, insurance guys, construction guys, and all that stuff, and they would take up the hotels. Well, now you have that, and you have Ragbri people. So finding a hotel that we could stay at was nearly impossible. We ended up having to stay at least 45 minutes away from our home and from our kids' schools. And I think we spent $300 a night on a hotel room once because it was the only hotel available for like four nights we had to do that. The kicker was that that was out of our pocket and we would be getting reimbursed by the insurance company. So,
did you have moments of hopelessness or did you always have hope?
My wife and I both tried very hard to stay strong, but we both had moments where we broke down. And I think the hardest part for us was not just longing for a sense of normalcy for our kids. When we had to drive on the highway to get from one point to another and you have your windows wrapped in plastic and that sound, you have this terrible, loud sound that I can't even describe of that plastic just slapping against the window and you duct taped it down and you're trying to just have some quiet and some calm and it's just chaotic. It's like a machine gun going off. I'll never forget that sound and I hated that sound because I knew there was nothing we could do to fix it. And so there were times where we would drive from point A to point B and I would start crying and the kids wouldn't see it because they were in the back seat, but my wife and I would just kind of hold hands, you know. We had to take turns being strong for each other.
Well, you mentioned that you had good insurance and how that helped. How did that help? And what advice do you have for anyone living in a vulnerable area?
I would say that first and foremost, make sure that you have what's called loss of use coverage. Loss of use is a clause that basically says that if you have to be out of your home, that any expenses you would normally not have to pay for are covered. So in our case, we would go grocery shopping and spend a couple hundred dollars for food for the month. Well, when you don't have groceries, you have to eat out at the hotel or at restaurants. And that sounds fun, but when you have to do it for 3 months straight, it's not. But loss of use covers that. We had clothes that we couldn't get access to because they were either ruined or they had been moved into storage. So loss of use covered new clothes that we were able to get. I mean, just take the time if you own a home or even rental insurance, make sure that you take the time to understand what's in that policy and that it covers the stuff that you need. Because the other side of that story is that right after we got everything taken care of, my insurance company informed us that they were dropping all of their residential customers across the country and only doing commercial. So we went from having fantastic insurance to not being able to get insurance for our home for a short time because right before the tornado, we had had a little bit of hail. So we had damage to a roof we had to claim. And then there was an issue with the flooded toilets. So we had water damage. And even though since 2005, we'd never filed a claim, we had three claims back to back, two of them natural disasters. And because we had three claims in a year, nobody would insure us. And so you want to talk about starting over, having to start over from having fantastic insurance to now having to find new insurance and hope that you can get something decent. And so we found insurance that was good, and thank God, and then we had a derecho.
Well, that's what I wanted to get into. That was just in 2020. During the pandemic, you also got hit with a derecho. And for those that don't know, what is a derecho and how did that impact your life?
So a derecho is basically it's hurricane force winds. This is about the strength of a Category 3 hurricane. And that doesn't sound so bad, but it goes on for about 2 hours and it hit the entire state of Iowa. So basically the damage that would have happened to our house from the tornado happened to the entire city. Because when the tornado hit, it only hit the north side of town. The south side of town was completely untouched. It was literally just a path of destruction. And it was so bad that, I mean, 3 years later and they're still working on fixing the courthouse. Well, when the derecho hit, it hit the entire town. It hit the entire state. So it is massive damage. In one way, the tornado was a blessing because we didn't have any trees that could flame against the house and destroy it. On the other side of town, they still have all their trees. And so they had a lot worse damage because all the damage was already done. it's literally an hour and a half to 2 hours that this storm is just pounding and pounding and pounding your house. And that's really scary for the kids. It was like having the tornado hit again, but really hard and feeling like it would never end.
Did going through the tornado actually help in dealing with the derecho, or was it just a completely different experience?
Well, it was weird because my son, who is now six, right after the tornado, he still has some PTSD from it. And I think my daughter does too, but my son definitely does. He's developed a tic, and he was very worried after the tornado that another one would hit. And so it was hard for him to feel safe. And especially if when we do the practice tornado sirens, or if there's weather warnings on the TV or anything like that. And we had to reassure him, you know, that was probably a once in a lifetime thing. Don't worry, a tornado's not going to hit us again. And even if it does, we know what to do. And then when the derecho hit, it was like, okay, now what? How do we tell our son that this isn't going to happen again when it is happening now? We were ready. We had a bug out bag, so to speak, that was downstairs in our basement. And we took, here's another safety tip for you. Take towels, big towels, and put them over your head so if glass breaks, it doesn't cut your head or your arms or your neck when you're in the basement. But we had that all ready. And so we now know, and we any time that the tornado drill goes off, we fill up a laundry basket with towels and blankets and our necessities, our major files that we need, that we'll need for insurance and social security cards, all that stuff, and we bring it down to the basement with us. Yeah, I know your show is all about starting over, and I think that's it. We had to learn how to start over with how we deal with these types of disasters.
One thing I'm fascinated by is the power we all have to deal with change, especially when we're forced to change. How do you see the difference between having change forced upon you as compared to choosing to change?
I think personally that choosing to change is harder, much, much harder. And I say that as a reformed douchebag. To quote Bobcat Goldthwait, I used to be a real jerk, but now I'm a people guy. When you have to make personal change about who you are, about the type of person you are, and about taking accountability, you have to first confront your demons. And it's not about just apologizing to those you've wronged, it's about admitting to yourself what you've done that was wrong, that you've been lying to yourself about for so long. Whereas when change is forced upon you, it's an adapt or die situation. Mentally, you are in a place where you make changes because you have to survive and because there are people who are depending on you, versus making changes because you know that those you love deserve better and that you want better for yourself.
On top of all the challenges you faced, you also have adult ADD. How were you able to focus on so many different yet important things at a time of crisis?
There's a lot of ways. I'm a big ADD advocate, so I was really happy to hear that you wanted to have this part of the conversation. I was diagnosed with ADD when I was a kid. It was in fourth or fifth grade, and at the time, there was no real understanding of it. They pricked my finger and did a blood draw, which I don't think you can tell ADD, and it's a psychological test now. There's no blood drawn. And then they came back and said, yeah, he's got it, so they put me on Ritalin. And the funny thing is, they thought it was something you grew out of. And so I stopped being medicated. And the medication, there's so many different medications out there. There's stimulants, there's non-stimulants. And fortunately, through my own path of figuring out what works best for me in terms of medication and meditation, I've learned how to be medicated properly so that I can process information differently. And you bring up a good point. When you have a lot of different external stimulants, how do you filter out what's most important? And for me, it was figuring out that I need to prioritize things. When I say I kept lists on stuff, I mean, I literally kept lists on just about everything. And that helped a lot because I felt like I was organizing chaos. And having the presence of mind and being very mindful of what you can control and what you can't control and what others have the ability to control that you may need to delegate to is insanely helpful. Nothing will show you what you can't control like a tornado or a derecho.
Academically, when you graduated high school, how were you in school with ADD? Were you an A student or more of a C student?
I was a hardcore C student. In my family, my dad pushed me and he didn't understand ADD at all. If you get a D, it's the same thing as an F. And I'm like, but it's passing. He's like, no, it's not. You're not below average. And so I was a C student. I graduated with a B and some A's my senior year in 1999 because I was trying to impress a girl that I ended up marrying. But she was the one who pushed me to do homework and things like that. And it was because I wasn't on medication. Like I said, they thought you grew out of it. So by the time I was in high school, I stopped the medication. I thought, it doesn't help me. Why should I take it? And since my parents didn't fully understand ADD at all, they were just frustrated because they knew I was smart. They knew that when I really applied myself, I could do really well. And so they didn't understand why I didn't get it and why I struggled so much to stay focused and why I was doing horribly when they knew that I could get it. And having the right medication or having the right methods in place to deal with ADD makes all the difference in the world. When I figured out what works for my ADD, it made everything better. It made things easier to process. It made it easier to focus. I mean, the only reason, even though it was 1 or 2 in the morning and I was doing those finals in a hotel lobby, I was smart enough to know, okay, my medication wears off at a certain point. My classes are at this time. What times do I need to make sure I have my focus on point? And what time do I need my medication wear off by so I can sleep for at least 3 to 4 hours? So I had to start over on figuring out how my brain works and processes information and functions at its highest capacity and when that time was most vital. So from high school, it was, I don't care. I'm going to play video games. I'm going to watch movies. I'm going to hang out with my friends. And I'm going to get good grades to impress this girl, but whatever. I never thought I'd go back to college. I thought I was too stupid for it. I really did. I truly believe that I was too stupid to go back to college. And I graduated from getting my associate's degree with a 3.88 GPA. And I had that 3.5 GPA in my undergrad. And I think I'm right about a 3.48. It slipped a little bit since I was in the master's. So it's having that different mentality and that different understanding how your own mind works is vital. It's so important.
I know you, at one point, you were a blackjack dealer. You were a telemarketer. You worked for a check cashing company. You weren't happy. You were unhappy. What was the root of your increasing ambition as compared to settling for less in other jobs?
Yeah, God, you've done your homework, my friend. That's a good question. So I said blackjack because it was what paid me and because I thought it was cool to work in a casino, but I was young and kind of stupid. And I noticed that I liked the leadership role and I liked being able to delegate, but not because I liked being bossy, because I liked helping people succeed. I noticed that from an early on. I noticed that I liked training people and teaching people new skills once I figured something out. I was the guy that would say, after a mentor pointed this out, sit me by the best performing guy so I can kick his butt. I want to learn from him and then I want to beat him, right? And so when I realized how competitive I was, I naturally went towards sales. And I've sold everything except for car insurance and houses and cars. I've sold a lot of stuff. I've done door-to-door sales even. I was really good at it, and because I had a mentality of if you believe in your product and you believe in yourself, you can sell anything. But slowly I shifted from selling because I wanted to hit quotas to a more servant sales style. I went from everybody wants my product, they just don't know it yet, to I may have a product for everybody, but I have to figure out which one is their product, what's best for them. And so finally, back in 2015, right before I went back to school to get my associate's degree, I started working for this company that did inbound tech support and that sort of thing. They didn't do telemarketing, it was all support and customer service. And so they outsourced to Iowa. And I naturally did very, very well for them. And then I got promoted to trainer and I'd always wanted to do that. That went well. And then the client that had me being a trainer ended up pulling their business. So they put me in a new role, which was business development. And for business development, what I realized is that the company I worked for sucked at their marketing. The website was nowhere near what it should be compared to the competitors. And so I went to the director of marketing, sent an email and said, listen, here's some ideas that I have. And they were just natural ideas. I hadn't done any real research on it. I said, you know, we really should come up with some kind of a content marketing strategy or something to get our name out there. This is what our competitors aren't doing that I think we should do. I didn't realize it, but I'd done a full competitive analysis and I had no idea that's what it was. What I didn't know is that it's not the sales side that I loved. It was the marketing side. And in my mind, they're intertwined. You can't sell something unless it's marketed well. And you can't market something unless you could sell it, unless you understand the virtues of it. And so that led me, my wife said, you know, we're never going to do better until my father passed away in 2015. And that really had a hard hit impact. He was only 63. And my wife said, you should go back to school. And I didn't think I could. I was like, okay, sure. So when I resigned, it was to get a degree because what it ended up happening was all these ideas that I told the marketer at that firm, the marketing director said, yeah, that sounds like all right. But she blew me off. And then 2 weeks later, I'd see an email from the CEO that went out to the whole company that said, our marketing director has this fantastic idea. Here's what we're rolling out. And we're already seeing this amazing progress. And then I'd get an email a little later from the marketing director saying, hey, so let's talk about this. And she'd brainstorm with me. She'd take the idea and she'd run with it. So she would take my ideas and really do well, and I was getting no credit for it. My job was to try and set up appointments and do business development stuff for the director of sales. And that was it. And so I started creating content. I created blogs and things like that. I started doing digital marketing all the way back then. Didn't know that's what I was doing. Created infographics and I created blog content and I created website content. I created an entire sales marketing and training program that they rolled out. And they said, anybody who wants to be in leadership in this company has to go through this program now. So they rolled it out across their entire company. And I didn't care about not getting credit, but I cared about not getting paid. So the owner of the company at the time, the CEO and owner, was going to retire and he sold the company. And I started to CC him and the entire C-suite on my email communication with the director of marketing. And I got a call and he said, listen, Steve, I'm going to need you to come to Des Moines. And I went, okay. And he said, I'd like to have a meeting with you. And I'd never met this guy, the CEO. And I said, okay. So I drove down and I met with him and he said, so I'm going to be honest with you guys. I got a week left. I know that everything that we've been doing as a company in terms of marketing and our changes have been coming from you. He goes, where'd you get your degree? And I said, School of Life. He goes, what do you mean? I said, I don't have a degree. He goes, you don't even have an associate? I said, no. And he goes, see, I would love to fire my director of marketing and put you in that position right now. He goes, but I can't get that past the new board of the people who own the company now without you having that piece of paper. And that was a starting over point for me, Reg. That was a huge starting over point for me because then my wife, when I went home and told her about that, I was so upset because so many times I'd been passed over for promotion because I didn't have that piece of paper. She convinced me to go back to school and get the paper. And I did really well. I ended up graduating with honors for my associates. And I went on for the next piece of paper. That's how I got to where I am psychologically and professionally. And now I'm a digital marketing strategist. And I basically create digital marketing strategies for Fortune 500 companies, for small nonprofits, solo entrepreneur situations, to major airports. One of the major airports on the other side of the world is one of our clients. It's my passion. I really enjoy it.
I think it's really amazing, your journey. And I understand that a lot of people are risk averse when it comes to such life-changing decisions, like getting a higher education. Were you always a risk taker, or was it hard for you to take such big risks in life?
I didn't think about it. To be honest with you, I made a 5-year goal. I didn't think about how I was going to get there. I didn't take my life very seriously for a long, long time until my dad passed away. To me, to think, well, that was 2015. That was not very long ago. The idea of going back to school was terrifying to me. I'm not a risk taker in that sense. Now I am, in the sense that if I have a theory about marketing and I've researched it, I take those risks. You, in fact, this is how we met. You have seen everything that I do on Instagram and social media. It's all testing things so that I can go to a client and say, this is what works. And so I'm taking those risks so my clients don't have to, because I have no skin in the game except for their success. So ultimately, I'm seeing how people are engaging on social platforms. I'm taking those risks. And I'll be honest with you, my personal philosophy is that you have to be willing to take risks. You can't be led by fear, because there is no growth without change. There is no growth without overcoming that fear and taking that risk. You have to decide, am I satisfied with the status quo? Do I want to be happy? The best way to answer this question for you, I think, is that if you want to make changes in your life, you have to have that moment of need recognition. So in the sales cycle, there's a moment of need recognition, and marketing is all about sparking that. And the need is defined as when a person realizes that where they are and where they would rather be are not aligned. And so then they start information seeking. They start figuring out how they can fix it. And then they try and figure out whether or not it's worth it to them and what the cost of that is, right? So in my mind, if you want to grow, if you want to get better at anything, start taking risks. Worst case scenario, you learn. I like failing. I like failing hard. I like failing big, because then I can learn from it and I can grow and I can move up. I knew that if I wanted to stop making low income, if I wanted to start making the kind of money that my family deserved, not that I deserve, but my family deserved, and give them the lifestyle that I wanted them to have, then I needed that piece of paper. So it wasn't a question of if I should go back to school or if I should stop working or if we could even afford it. It was, how can I make this happen? Because I recognize that need, that I want my life to change. I don't want to live paycheck to paycheck. I don't want to have to live worrying about if I need to file for some kind of aid. I want to have money in the bank. I want to know what it feels like to not be afraid, and to not be afraid of whether or not I can. I mean, my kids have always had food in their belly, but I haven't. And that's a terrifying feeling of whether or not you're going to be able to make things work. I realized that the only way I was going to make that happen is if I took that risk, because it's not a risk, it's an investment.
How would you describe your association to change when you were young? Was it something that you were used to, or was change hard for you?
We moved a little bit when I was younger, and that's a pretty big change. I think I went through like 3 different kindergartens or 4. I lived in Tennessee and I lived in Davenport, Iowa. We moved a little bit, and then my dad finally said, no, I'll travel. You guys stay in this town. And I wasn't afraid of change, but I wasn't a fan of it. And my view of change has evolved, which is that, and maybe this is wisdom with years and experience, but I've learned that without change, there's no growth. And that the difference between those who are successful and those who fail is how quickly and easily and efficiently and effectively you can adapt to that change.
How has your relationship with chaos evolved over time?
That's a great question. I think that the reason people get overwhelmed by chaos and the reason people fear change is because they're afraid of what they can't control. And when there's a chaotic situation, often this happens at work, actually, where I have 10,000 things I need to get done and I'm the only one that can do them. So I can get overwhelmed. I'm not perfect by any means. And what I've learned is, again, taking the time to organize, okay, what's the need to, what's the should, what's the I'd like to get done, and let's prioritize. I can only do one thing at a time. I have so many hours in the day. If I don't get to it, it has to be pushed off to tomorrow. It's not the end of the world. And when it comes to chaos and craziness around you, you have to look at, okay, what do I have control over in this situation? And what don't I? And if I don't have control over it, quick question, can I get control over it? And do I need to? And if not, then move on. What can I control?
Given all the setbacks, the adversity, the tornado, the derecho, ADD, how has all of that impacted your self-awareness?
I'm a Jedi when it comes to self-awareness, I think. I've got a black belt in self-awareness. No, I think that self-awareness and humility go hand in hand. And until you can recognize that you can beat off the monster that's ego, and you can recognize that you don't know everything and become self-aware of the things that you don't know and what you'd like to grow with, that's the key. That's the secret, is that once you've figured out how things fit together in terms of what you don't know, it's everything.
It's interesting that you say what you don't know, because I kind of associate that to the unknown. And you and I have had a few exchanges online about similar life experiences. You also went through a version of being homeless that I can relate to. When my parents split, I lost my family unit, ended up bouncing around without one central home. I wasn't homeless on the street, but I lost my home, so everything was unknown. What did your experience in a version of being homeless do to inform your relationship with the unknown?
The difference, I think, for me was that it wasn't just me that was, I was worried about having a place where my kids were going to be able to stay, especially that first night after the tornado. We couldn't stay in our house. I didn't even know if it was structurally sound. So keeping my kids safe, that was the priority. And not having information, not knowing where your kids are going to sleep, you have to figure it out. You have to find the answers. So making the calls, putting in the footwork, and not leaving anything to chance. I mean, you have to figure out, again, what you can control. I know that seems like a revolving theme here, but for me, that was really a big part of it, is if you don't know what you can control, then figure out what you can. I didn't know where I was going to be able to stay, so my wife and I took turns. I think one of the craziest parts was, you know, during the day when you're making a bunch of phone calls and you have no power on your side of town, how do you charge your phone when it dies? And what are we going to do when it dies? So it's figuring out what the next things are.
How important has it been to have your wife's support? She seems like an amazingly supportive woman of your journey. And it seems that you guys support each other through such amazingly difficult times. How important is that support? What does that look like from your perspective?
I would say that nothing will bond a couple or tear them apart or test them quite like going through 2 natural disasters and a pandemic. I mean, I read somewhere that there's been more divorces since the pandemic than in any time in history. And that makes sense. What I was trying to say is that she is the most supportive human being on the planet, and she is the most selfless person I've ever met. And I love my wife with every fiber of my being. She has forgiven me for things that I would not ask anyone to forgive people for. She's an amazing human being, and she is encouraging, and she believes in me when I don't, and I don't deserve her. I'm very blessed to have her in my life. I don't deserve her, and I work every day to deserve her. And I think that that deep love, I mean, we've been dating since 1997 is what it comes down to.
Well, tell me about your podcast, The Deep Gripping Reality. What's the show about? Where can people find it? What are your goals with the show? It's really amazing and incredibly valuable for people.
Ironically, starting the Deep Gripping Reality was, I had a client tell me that they wanted to start a podcast, but they couldn't afford it. They didn't have the time. And I thought, there's got to be a way to do it for free. There's got to be a way to do it quickly and edit on the go. So I started putting out daily episodes with my insider tips and tricks and marketing stuff that I was telling clients about anyway, or that I was thinking about anyway. So I just started recording it on the drive to and from work every day. That was a 45-minute drive. So I'd have 45 minutes drive. I had 45 minutes on the way back to either brainstorm or add to it. I did guest spots on my lunch breaks. It was a proof of concept. I wanted to prove that I could do it with using only apps on my phone and not paying a dime. And to this day, using only apps on my phone, and I think I may have spent money on one or two things. It's consistently, it's putting out content, it's testing things. I test things on my podcast so that other people don't have to. So the Deep Gripping Reality is available on any major podcast platform. It's through Anchor, it's on Apple, it's all over the place. I started originally putting out an episode a day, 5 days a week, but then I realized even with scheduling ahead, holidays became a pain. So now I do it first, I do it on Tuesday, the first Tuesday of every week. I do it on Tuesday early morning every week, and I have them scheduled out about 5 in advance, and it's interlaced with other content. So if you follow me on Instagram, at TDGR Podcast, you get a taste of what is going to end up being on the show, because I'll go live, I'll use that video, I'll strip the audio from it, and I'll put it on the podcast. And then a lot of times on the podcast, that audio will then just become a clip, and I'll go deeper insights on the podcast. So the benefit is you get an early insight into what a future episode is going to be. But when you tune into the podcast, you get more of it. You get it much deeper. And so the whole thing is an experiment on how many different ways, with as little time investment and money investment as possible, can I repurpose content to share information about digital marketing and growth and help people reach their goals.
It really is amazing because, like I said to you before, I'm starting over with my podcast now from being online for 25 years, working online for 25 years. And I really became jaded in a lot of ways because I'd seen so much. And a lot of recurring behaviors online. And when I found you and your podcast, you really inspired me to, hey, just be myself. You were my access point to this world and to really be me and use my expertise and tell my story. You really impacted my life in ways you have no idea. So I just want to let you know that you've had an amazing impact. It's just been fantastic. So I just wanted to let you know that. But I have one more question for you. When you look back at all that you've been through, the many moments of starting over, personally, professionally, academically, what advice can you give someone who may be struggling out there today with the challenges that seem insurmountable or impossible to overcome?
All things are temporary, and even the worst, most excruciating pain will pass. My first semester going back to school, taking classes that I was grossly unequipped to take, I fell. I took my daughter skating and I slipped and fell and I broke my arm and leg, my right arm and leg, which meant that I couldn't use a wheelchair and I couldn't use crutches. I had to use a knee scooter. And so I had to start over how I transported. So there was physical pain. My son was still in diapers, so I couldn't get up and help change diapers. So there was psychological pain. I couldn't bathe myself without help. Fortunately, my wife was a nurse, so she could help. And so physically and psychologically, it was exhausting. But I just kept remembering this is temporary. And where I go from here is completely up to me. What I do with what I'm learning is completely up to me. I learned not to take my family for granted. I learned to appreciate my wife so much more than I ever had before. And that's really the best advice I can give you, that no matter where you are in life, no matter how many times you have to start over, it's your rebirth and you're a phoenix. The difference is that instead of being reborn and forgetting everything, you get to remember the lessons of the past and grow with it.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for doing this. I'm grateful because it's so important that people realize that they're not alone, that there is hope when challenges seem impossible to overcome. So I truly appreciate you sharing your story. It means a world to me. I know it's going to mean the world to a lot of people listening. So thank you very much.
Truly a pleasure. Your story matters. Everybody has a story. Your story matters. And even if you never get to tell it, somebody's going to see it. Somebody's going to hear it. When you told me that what I'm doing on Instagram inspired you, and that's the core reason of why I'm doing what I'm doing, is because I want to help make somebody's life better. And there's always somebody watching you. You are an influencer in somebody's life. You just don't know it.
Thanks for listening to the Starting Over Drive podcast. Join us next time for another real story of starting over. In the meantime, make sure to follow us on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, Stitcher, and all major podcasting platforms. Head to the Starting Overdrive Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our channels, help us grow, And feel free to share your story of starting over, or even let us know if you relate to any of the issues touched upon in our interviews. You can also find us at the Starting Overdrive podcast at the official site, www.startingoverdrive.com.